From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 457, Microsoft Operations Management Suite with guest Cameron Fuller. Recorded Monday, January 25th, 2016. Run As Radio is produced each week by PWOP Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today is Cameron Fuller, back after entirely too long. He's a System Center MVP for Cloud and Data Center Management and a Veeam Vanguard. He's also the principal consultant for Catapult Systems and serves as their corporate practice lead for System Center. He has 20 years of infrastructure experience focusing on management solutions. And Cameron has co-authored a number of System Center books, routinely contributes technical articles to popular Windows magazines, and maintains a highly technical blog. And you can find more about Cameron as a speaker at conferences like System Center Universe and the Midwest Management Summit. I had not heard of the Midwest Management Summit. That sounds like good fun.
It's actually a pretty interesting one. As we go back through the years since we've had a chance to talk, so Microsoft used to have a conference that they called MMS.
Yes, which they rolled into Tech Ed.
Yeah, which they rolled into Tech Ed, which then in turn, as you know, kind of rolled into Ignite.
The monster that is Ignite.
Yeah, the beastie conference. They were saying, what, 20,000 last time? They're aiming for like 40,000 people this time?
Well, and they moved it to Atlanta as well. So, I don't know, did you go to Chicago?
I unfortunately missed that. I was on break during that time frame, but I had a bunch of friends who went.
It was a zoo. I mean, it's a lot of fun just to be aware of how big our community is. But boy, it was a challenge to get food. It was everything is challenging at that scale. So I'm excited to get to Ignite in September, but it's just so vast and the topic area is so large. It's got to be challenging to find your people, especially, you know, it's one thing to be SQL Server or SharePoint. There's just not as many System Center people.
Yeah, I was kind of curious to see, I mean, what was your thoughts in terms of how did it impact the community of the people that we know through System Center and everything? I mean, did they find that still felt like home, or was it just so massive that they didn't feel comfortable?
Yeah, I don't know that I could even answer that question. You know, I'm a hangers-on at the best of times with all of these things. So I would hate to even try and speak for a community, but in terms of people I could find and chat with, I ended up, you know, doing my sort of typical run as gig of having a stage and doing different 10-minute talks with various people about a variety of technologies and a bunch that I made into run as episodes. So I enjoyed myself, but it's always a challenge to get out of the office and get in front. Are you going to get in front of the people and meet your peers? Like, are you getting what you should get from an in-person event? I mean, I think the biggest strength of Ignite, and this is true of Tech Ed, and it was true of MMS before, is getting in front of the Microsoft product team members to talk about how you really use the product and what your frustrations are.
Absolutely. And I think it's interesting because I think Ignite gives you one approach to that. I think the community conferences give you another approach to it.
Yeah, and I think this gets back to that whole Midwest Management Conference. The idea of having a dedicated conference around management of systems, I think, is an awesome and is in a smaller setting, I think, very powerful.
Absolutely. No, I agree with you on it. And it's interesting because the way they do it, they don't record any of them, and they run presentations are an hour plus at least 30 minutes of Q&A time. So
right.
They're expecting that you're going to be answering questions.
And you're going to get it. You are amongst your peers. Like in some, I think I'd rather be with 500 people who are all working on the same set of problems and have different approaches to solving it than with 20,000 people that are working on hundreds of different problems.
I hear you on that one. I think they both have their places, but I think they're very different.
So how's your System Center life these days? I notice your MVP has changed, right? I mean, you're still in the System Center space, but they've now bundled that under Cloud and Data Center Management today.
Yeah, it's changed a lot of times over the last several years. I mean, I think the most recent incarnation, what they really did is they took the MVP program and they carved it down to a smaller number of subsets of different disciplines, and then they moved them all in together. So, like, as an example, Cloud and Data Center Management now includes things like PowerShell.
Right.
You know, so we went from, like, 80 MVPs to, like, 400 MVPs in our group now.
Well, and I mean, let's face it, if you're responsible for the management and maintenance and monitoring of systems, you may come at that from a system center point of view. You might come at it from a PowerShell point of view. There's lots of different ways to sort of skin this cat, too, that might get represented in an MVP.
Yeah, and it's, I think that's part of the reason why they pulled it together and why they changed it, in essence, is they looked at it that the big push they were making was that people were contributing in different buckets than they had been contributing before. You know, just because I'm a cloud and data center management MVP doesn't mean that I don't do something in the other buckets, but sure, you don't get credit for the work in the other buckets.
Yeah.
This was kind of a rearrange to allow that to happen.
That's always been a problem, and it's always been a challenge on the MVP side. And meantime, System Center, I mean, it's absurd for us to even talk about, well, 5 years ago, like, there's been so much change. It feels like so much more of a cloud-centric product today.
Yeah, it has moved a lot. I mean, and it's interesting because, you know, the tools that I've worked with and lived with for so long are still out there and still doing fine and
sure,
still evolving. I mean, we're looking at a System Center 2016 release. I mean, Config Manager is already kind of pre-released on their stuff and getting ready for, you know, all the stuff required for Windows 10. But now you've got all the rest of the System Center stack that's lined up for, you know, updates that's coming this year. So all the people who are used to Operations Manager and Virtual Machine Manager and all those other things in the System Center stack, they're still revising and updating. But then in addition to that, we've got the whole new suite of, you know, technologies with EMS and OMS and where they all fit into the equation nowadays, which is also changing the landscape.
All right. So what are we talking about when we mean Operation Management Suite? Is that just a collection of System Center tools?
It's a collection of different cloud-based tools. So as an example, there's I consider to be like three big buckets on it. So the first is around log analytics. So the ability to be able to pull data from different data sources lets you easily be able to visualize what information's occurring within there. So that's the first big piece.
Mm-hmm.
And then they've also got two other pieces. They've got a piece around Azure Backup and Azure Site Recovery. So that whole backup piece that's been covered. And then the third major bucket is around Azure automation. So your ability to be able to automate things that run within Azure and actually on your on-prem systems within that. So all of those are all components of what Microsoft has branded as OMS.
Okay. And these are, you know, I've certainly had the experience once you start using Azure in any substantial numbers, trying to figure out what's related to what, you know, all of the VMs are in one can and all of the databases are in another can. It's like, that's not system related at all.
Yeah, it's an entirely different way to look at it. I mean, I think that what they're pushing towards in essence is when things in the cloud move as fast as they do, you have to have a monitoring and management system that can adapt to that just as quickly. I think that's really what they're pushing towards with these new technologies.
It, for me, from an operations perspective, it's absolutely kind of organized by the service group. And it's all of these different things in sort of together. Does it start with instrumentation, being able to actually see a given service as a whole?
It's right now, it's in kind of a different realm. So if you're really looking at Ops Manager versus OMS, like where Operations Manager still really, you know, just thrives is things like business services. When you define, hey, this is my line of business application, here's all the servers and the services that are related to it, all of that currently still happens really just within Operations Manager. So if you're looking at, you know, I want to know this business service in itself, that's really where it exists right now. Now, but there's an interesting development that's occurring there. So Microsoft bought a company called BlueStripe. Are you familiar with them?
No. What's BlueStripe?
Well, BlueStripe was a vendor on the Operations Manager side, and they did automated distributed application discovery. So they would basically discover your line of business applications and build them into Ops Manager so that if that app changes over time, your monitoring changes over time to match it.
Interesting, because there was always the map tool, right, that Microsoft had. That was supposed to be able to discover services inside of your systems as well, or at least what Microsoft licensed products you had.
Exactly. And in this case, what it was kind of designed in essence was you got the licensed product piece of it over there, but in terms of from a monitoring perspective, you need to know, let's take a three-tier app.
Right.
If I've got a front end, you know, middle services that I'm executing and a back end database, you know, in Ops Manager, when we used to map these things out and build a distributed application, you got to go in there and sit down with the teams and say, okay, so what's the name of your database? And then find where they put the server at. And
right.
Then, okay, what websites and all that? And you map it all together. And then the problem was, like, 2 weeks later, usually they come in, they add another server, they remove a server, they move something, and then what you're monitoring has, in essence, changed. It doesn't match the reality of what the actual app is like.
Now, you would hope that the development team is working with the ops team with each new version to keep track of this stuff.
You would hope, but in most organizations that I've worked with over time, there tends to be that big disconnect that the developers develop, and when they're done, they keep changing things as they need to, and they adapt to it, and they oftentimes don't think about, you know, what's going to have to change within the operations
right.
side of it to actually keep up with the reality of what they've got.
Yeah, it's easy. And even when they do communicate, it's easy to make mistakes, too, to leave something out. It's useful to have a tool actually out there watching. So Blue Stripe, and admittedly, it's been acquired now for several months now, and so it's probably inside the machine trying to see how it's going to surface. They would actually figure out what pieces were communicating with other pieces?
Exactly. And as a matter of fact, we have, from the press releases that we saw, Microsoft committed that they will provide the functionality of Blue Stripe within OMS. So they've already, you know, committed as part of the acquisition that that's their plan.
Right.
And they've listed, if you go into OMS and you look at what they call solutions, this is like their pre-built functionality within OMS. There's one in there for application dependency, which if you look at the graphic for app dependency and you look at the graphic for what we had for Blue Stripe, they look remarkably similar.
Vaguely
to each
related,
other.
Huh? Somehow. Hey, nothing wrong with that. I mean, what an endorsement for a technology, too. So that's really cool.
Absolutely. And we're really hoping that that's what it looks like, and that we're going to be able to get the ability to be able to do all that type of stuff that we really were hoping for from the acquisition. And I will admit, completely selfishly, and as well for my clients selfishly, my clients out there, it would be very helpful for us if not only could we get that information into OMS, but if there was a way that we could funnel it back into Operations Manager so that we can kind of best of both worlds that situation. That's what we're really, really hoping for.
Because it strikes me that OMS's focus is the sort of cross-platform unified story. It's not necessarily Azure, could be AWS, not necessarily Windows, could easily be Linux. So I suspect they're putting a lot more energy into that than necessarily tying it totally into System Center.
Yeah, I think you're valid and correct in that. I think their goal with this, in essence, is to provide a very compelling product. And it's important for them that it's going to be able to support existing communities that are using System Center.
Sure.
But I think primarily the number one driver is how do we manage and monitor all the things that are out there and focusing on that versus focusing so much on how do we integrate it with, you know, on-prem tool sets.
This is a holy grail piece, right? I really want one view of everything in my infrastructure. It's just that, like the holy grail, tough to get to.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I mean, it's totally fair. It's just a question of for us existing true believers, our System Center users, how does OMS really play in?
Well, I see it as really kind of playing pretty well within the value add or the better together type scenario. So let's take an example here. So within Ops Manager, one of the things that it has not been historically very good at is reporting, or I should say reporting in a real-time situation. So when you run a report in Ops Manager, in most environments I've been to, it's time to go get coffee, okay?
Yeah. Stand by.
Stand by. We'll get back to it. And, you know, if you schedule them, that's okay and everything. But so what they've done within OMS and where it really shines is that it allows you to be able to run your own queries. It allows you to be able to do some really good carve-up information within this that is much more difficult in Ops Manager. I mean, I've seen a query that ran through billions of records in a second or two.
Right.
So the performance is incredible. And their pre-built dashboarding and stuff like that is very useful. So it makes it easy to be able to kind of analyze from a higher level the information that you're getting. So I see a definite play there within where we gain from Ops Manager, you know, line of business apps and all that type of stuff that we've talked about, the management pack ecosystem that's out there. I mean, there's a management pack for freaking everything. There's a management pack for monitoring a coffee pot. So you name it.
And also for cross-platform stuff too, right?
Absolutely. Both of them are actually working very well in the cross-platform space. That's been a very nice change of direction since Satya took over. So we've seen a complete redo of the Operations Manager agent on Unix and Linux with about half the memory footprint requirements that the previous one had. And then on the other side of it, in OMS, they announced Nagios and Zabbix direct connection capabilities to be able to route those agents directly up into OMS. So you don't even need an Ops Manager agent if you've got Nagios or Zabbix to be able to get data up there.
Well, now we're getting down to the sort of brass tacks things of if OMS is really going to deliver what it's supposed to deliver and it's working all this cross-platform stuff, if you're, I mean, OpsMan is highly addictive. You get really good at when you take the time to tune it properly to understand what's really going on in your applications in the Windows space. How do you get to that level of instrumentation when it's Linux on AWS?
It's much more difficult. I mean, it is possible, but it is a much more difficult situation. I mean, I've had some clients that I've worked with where we've done line of business application monitoring. So we've had Oracle on the back end and Unix, Linux systems involved and all the rest of it. And it fits into that framework really well. But it isn't necessarily as intuitive. You know, some of the things we do are far more challenging when you're doing this from a Unix, Linux perspective than they are, you know, out of the box Windows type stuff. Especially when you get into the application, deepness into the application, then it starts getting much more challenging.
Absolutely. And, Cameron, give me 1 second to pay the bills here, because Run As Radio is brought to you by UpGuard, formerly known as ScriptRock. UpGuard pinpoints configuration drift wherever it occurs within your environment, no matter the platform, and alerts you to unexpected changes happening on any machine. Vulnerability scanning and PowerShell DSC support come as standard, and the latest iteration of UpGuard is the only platform that gives you CSTAR, that's Cybersecurity Threat Assessment Reporting, and a FICO-like score for your cyber risk. Try it for free at upguard.com/runasradio. I have not used Nagios, but as I understand it, like, this is the tool outside of the Microsoft world for instrumenting IT infrastructure.
Absolutely. I mean, I have friends of mine that I've gone back and forth with myriads of times of which is a better solution, and the general consensus we kind of hit was, you know what, Ops Manager does really well on the Windows side of things, mm-hmm. and Nagios does really well on the Unix Linux side of things.
And one of the things about being in the Unix Linux world is, like, so many of the networking appliances and so forth, they all work in this space. So you get a larger sub, you just don't find Windows on as many appliances. You're going to get more stuff instrumented effectively that way.
Yeah, and I think, again, I think that's one of the areas that Satya has really, made Microsoft shine, is to treat them all like first-class citizens. And
right.
The fact that we've got little things like on my iPad, I've got Word and Excel and PowerPoint and all these things that, it makes it so much more useful of a device than what it had been before. And I think that's all directly towards the shift of Microsoft embracing those other vendors as not always competition, but maybe something that they can work together with better.
And again, I got to think from an OMS perspective, being able to bring Nagios data into your OMS view, it'd be interesting to now, in theory, I should be able to sit side by side between some OpsMan instrumentation and some Nagios instrumentation and get a feel for how similar, how different they are.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that I think is a lot of the power of this, is if you can actually funnel all of the data that you've got from all of these different sources, now you'd be able to look at situations that you would never have been able to look at before because it's in one data set. To be able to query that data effectively and grab the pieces of information that you're looking for, that's where a lot of the power, I believe, that we're going to see within OMS as we go forward with this.
Sure. And it's just, you know what? The devil's going to be in the details on this. Right. It's one thing to say Nagios is integrated in OMS. It's another thing to actually evaluate, like, how integrated is integrated.
No, it's a good question. I mean, from what we've seen, at least within the OMS agents that we've got on the operations manager side, or ops manager or Windows type integrated systems, mm-hmm. what we see there is, your standard performance counters, easy information to be able to bring back into it. They've actually got a simple wizard type deal where you choose the performance counters you want. And this is one of the other areas that OMS shines, is that, historically, if you tried to get, like near real-time performance data in an ops manager, it just wasn't built for it.
Right.
It was really built for, don't give me, more frequent than every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, OMS now goes as low as a 10-second performance counter gather. So you can get near real-time information into it now.
All right. I feel like we're hammering on the instrumentation side, which, in my experience, has been the thing that most people don't have and is the biggest win when you start getting into these toolings. But the automation side has got to be a big talking point, just because this is such a complicated process and seems so platform specific.
Yeah, the automation, I mean, and I did a presentation at System Center Universe just last week, as a matter of fact, that we talked about doing more with less strategies to succeed in that type of an IT world. And one of the key points that I pushed on that one is the requirement of automation. Mm-hmm. I believe that if you're looking at the number one skill set that people need to be looking at over the next 5 years, it's automating things.
Right.
It's just, it's the next logical evolution for what we're doing.
Well, and every IT guy I've ever met is trying, you know, is not afraid of automation just because it's like, hey, I got stuff to do. I mean, I don't want to call us lazy, but it's like, I hate doing the same thing twice. I got so much to do. So I'm keen to automate. I just don't find that a lot of that automation is sustainable. You know, your custom made script, your custom this, it's stashed in that folder and so forth. Like, how do we build automation that is reliable, that other people can actually use, that sustains well?
Absolutely. And let me hit that from two levels. So First and foremost is anybody who's working with automation, the number one thing I'm saying at this point in time is use PowerShell.
Right.
We got Orchestrator out there, and we got SMA, and we got Azure Automation. But when it all comes down to it, if you're writing in PowerShell, you're putting it on a more reusable platform for the future. And to throw out the other thing, because this is what we announced last week, and this is actually where my you know focus has been for the last year. We announced it at Catapult what we call a solution as a service. So it's basically a fully managed solution that we do, and the solution's called Launch. And what we actually do within Launch is that we have built a platform for things like user onboarding, user terminations, group changes, and all the rest of it in a totally reusable fashion. So we actually can work with a client and automate all of those processes for them based upon their requirements, and then they can take it completely off their plate to look at because we handle all of it for them.
Right. And this is a great challenge. And for me, it's easy to write a PowerShell script. It's another thing to debug a PowerShell script. It's another thing, again, to make that script really reusable as systems change and to have anybody else be able to maintain that script. Like, where does it live? How do people understand it? How do we get past, you know, your personal magic box of tools as an IT guy?
Yeah, and there hasn't really been a whole lot of momentum in that direction. I mean, you've got CodePlex and other places where people are sharing scripts, but there is a very much a, you kind of build, you know, you steal from other people's scripts and leverage whatever people's scripts you need, you know, as you're building your own PowerShell stuff, but there's not a whole lot of reuse in terms of making those production grade PowerShell scripts that are going to have effective debugging them and are going to be reusable and modular and all that type of stuff. I think that's going to be an absolute growth area as we start to really move things forward.
So we look at OMS and their tooling around this automation. Are they helping us to sort of be responsible citizens and how we build that automation so that it is reusable, discoverable, manageable?
They're making some pretty good steps in there. They've actually got like, I'll talk specifically to SMA, and there's also pieces of this within Azure Automation, but in SMA as an example, I fired that up and it comes with Orchestrator, and within about an hour I had an SMA online and I was able to query alerts out of Operations Manager from a pre-built script that they had.
Nice.
That you could just, you know, hey, here we go. So in Azure Automation, you've got reusable modules and people were, you know, there's a gallery of scripts out there that are beginning to appear also. So I think Microsoft's being a pretty good community group on that in terms of providing, you know, reusable pieces. Now, they're not as far along as some of the other stuff that's out there. Have you familiar with IF by IFTTT?
If this, then that?
That's the one.
So okay. There is a an enterprise side to If This, Then That?
I am actually not familiar with the enterprise side. Okay. I'm just familiar with it from a consumer perspective.
Sure.
And from the consumer perspective, their concept of having recipes where they have, you know, the most common automations that are provided and written by the community and everything. I think that's genius.
Absolutely.
That's the type of thing that's going to help to be able to push this into the next, the next generation of where we need to go, you know.
Is that model basically reflected in the Azure Automation Runbooks?
To a degree, I think the Azure Automation Runbooks are a lot more complicated.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that they do with, if then in essence is they just make it so simple.
Yeah.
And you're just kind of walking through, hey, I want to check, you know, here's the sources that I want to work with. If this condition occurs, then I want this thing to occur. You know, if it's 7 o'clock in the morning, I would like my phone to unmute, you know, things like that.
Well, and I find my experience playing with the runbooks is as long as everything is Azure and or Microsoft, they're pretty simple. As soon as you get into PowerShell commands into third-party tools, you're pretty much down to handwriting stuff.
Yeah, and I would tend to agree with you on that there's a lot of validity to that.
Yeah.
The other thing that they've done really nicely is, are you familiar with the Azure Hybrid Runbook Worker?
No. What is this? This sounds cool.
It is cool. It's actually, and in my opinion, it's probably the number one thing that they announced at Ignite this year that kind of fell under the radar screen because I saw it and my ears perked up immediately when I started reading more about it. So what an Azure Hybrid Runbook Worker is, it's an OMS agent that exists in your environment that you designate to run jobs for Azure Automation. So what that means is, in essence, you don't have to have any connectivity inbound from Azure to be able to run jobs on-prem. You only have an outbound 5723 connection, your standard Ops Manager connection port, that it actually leverages to be able to execute these automations. So now you can automate things in Azure or up in anywhere in the cloud or in AWS, or you can run things on-prem.
So this, it doesn't have to use OMS? Like, this sounds like a tool I could use one way or the other. Is it OMS-centric?
It is OMS-centric. Okay. That's what they built it.
So this is a win for OMS, essentially. Here's this capability.
Absolutely. I mean, prior to the addition of that, if you're going to run on-prem stuff, you needed Orchestrator or you needed service management automation. You really didn't have a good option with Azure Automation.
And I never had a problem with Orchestrator. It was a third-party tool as well, as I recall. Now, his name's jumped out of my head.
No, you're correct on that. It was an acquisition of a company by the name of Opalis.
So that's, right.
And they did a beautiful job with their integration packs and everything, so you could quickly and easily integrate with other third-party stuff.
Yeah, and I was always impressed with how well Opalis did that sort of coordination between your service management side, people getting tickets and so forth, and just feeding it into the system. But it's not a small commit to go down that. It certainly had no real cloud focus.
Yeah, definitely no real cloud focus. And the other thing is the question of reusable automation. Even if you do build it in there, it's difficult to be able to get it from environment to environment and make it reusable. And then in addition to that, there's the challenges that, unless you're writing it in PowerShell, it's just really not that portable in a whole lot of ways.
Yeah, there's certainly degrees of portability. This sort of brings us to the old Windows Azure pack. And I love that I'm saying something about Azure that's old. But I mean, this was originally intended as a tool for resellers to use to do self-provisioning for customers. And then it just sort of blew up into people using it for all kinds of things. Like I've seen it used to provide VMs for developers automatically, self-service.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Windows Azure Pack is a great idea. I think the implementation of that, it's also part of CPS, the cloud platform stuff that they put out there, the cloud in a box type deal that Microsoft provided with Dell.
Right. And this gets back to this idea of, cloud is much an architecture, it is a product. And these were tooling to make you utilize this architecture. But it was a nightmare to install.
Yeah, I mean, the process flow to be able to install it and configure it and everything was absolutely not simple, and it's a lot of different things put together. I think it was necessary at the time that it was released, and I think now that they're bringing Azure Stack to bear, I mean, they're going to continue to support WAP from what I'm hearing and everything, but it looks like Azure Stack is really going to kind of take on that concept of, the bigger goal of this was not so much, hey, I want to be able to spin up VMs on-prem, as I want to be able to take some of the benefits of what Microsoft has already written in Azure and make that available on-prem.
Right.
And I think that Azure Stack is the direction they're heading with that.
And is there any emphasis in OMS at all on the on-prem side, or is this all about in the cloud?
Well, OMS itself will only run in the cloud.
Right.
They did do a good job with, OMS, if you're an existing Ops Manager environment, it's about 4 or 5 minutes to be able to get you onboarded into OMS so that your agent can report both to Ops Manager and OMS. So kind of facilitating that better together story. So they did do a good job with that.
Okay. So your services may still be running on-prem, but now they're pumping data to OMS in the cloud. It's just your instrumentation and consoles are living in the cloud.
Yeah, exactly. So you got some of the consoles on cloud and some in-prem, and there's even some third-party vendors that are showing how you can write dashboards and their stuff that actually queries both on-prem and the OMS. And that stuff is, and showcases that.
I wonder if this opens a door for those folks that are just not even thinking, I can't use the cloud at all. Everything must be on-prem, to say, hey, this is something I can pay for monthly and not have to own all this infrastructure. Like it'll be an asset for them.
Yeah. I mean, it is not at the stage right now where I truly believe that OMS can replace Ops Manager.
Sure.
There's some stuff that's just not there yet. But a lot of the people are really beginning to look at this as kind of the first step, and Microsoft really made this easy, because as an example, you can go to, Microsoft.com/OMS and create a login, and you can have a, continually available, access to OMS. It gives you 7 days of free retention and up to 500 megs per day, and it's a completely free tier.
Right, right. And it's, yeah, it's just an interesting side, this whole thing. Hey, so we're running down the clock here. Should we talk a little bit about the backup recovery side of OMS?
Yeah, I mean, I think we should hit that for a couple minutes. I mean, I think first off is that for those folks that are using Azure, if you've already got stuff up there and you're trying to figure out, you know, how do I back up the stuff that I've got there? And the Azure backup stuff is pretty impressive. I mean,
yeah, it's always been great.
And it's so simple. I mean, yeah. You define a policy with it, and, you know, once you've assigned your policy, it just takes care of it for you. So I think that part's been good. And then I think the bigger fringe one, I think it's the bigger investment in time to make it happen, but the massive ROI on it is the Azure Site Recovery.
Mm-hmm.
So within ASR, in essence, what you can do is you can define an entire recovery for your data center. So let's say you don't have an auxiliary data center. You can define that entire recovery process within it, test it within ASR, and then not actually have to pay much, if anything, from what I understand, until you actually perform the disaster recovery. So as opposed to going out and buying an entire second, you know, DR center, you build this up in ASR, you get it tested to the point that you're comfortable with it, and then you basically only restore in the, you know, the situation where you have a full disaster, and then your disaster recovery spot becomes Azure.
Right. That you could just start standing those services up in Azure. And this is, maybe back at the beginning of Azure, we were talking about this. It's like, I would like to be able to back up to the cloud and stand up in the cloud in a full site failure mode. So
absolutely.
They've delivered it. It seems to me they delivered it. I mean, anybody who's done disaster recovery knows perfectly well it isn't true until you've actually done it.
Absolutely.
I haven't done it yet, but I sure would like to try.
Yeah, I have a friend of mine who actually has done some testing on that and run through some good scenarios on it and everything. And I think there's a lot of good potential there that I think that, you know, if that eliminates the requirement of having to bring up an entire second DR center, you know, DR location, because you can run it up in Azure, and I think that's a huge win.
Yeah, sure. I mean, this back in the day, this is one of the things I used to do was build backup data centers. And it was a fun, extremely expensive job. That most people simply couldn't afford. The fact that we could bring this to more people, that they could actually think in terms of, we have a backup site we can fail to, I think it's very powerful.
Yeah, I agree with you completely.
Well, I'm pretty stoked about OMS. It's obviously early days yet, but it definitely looks like Microsoft thinking much more broadly about our problems in the data management space.
Yeah, I think they are, and I think they're making the right steps forward. I mean, another one we haven't talked about yet is, are you familiar with User Voice?
Yeah, the website for submitting ideas and bug reports and so forth.
Absolutely. So there's a User Voice out there for pretty much everything, including Ops Manager and OMS. And if you look at OMS and what's in the list of things that they're, you know, that's the highest priority, the number one thing in there is being able to create your own custom solutions, you know, so that partners can write solutions. And I believe they're working on that, it looks like. And before that, they wanted things like, hey, I want to have this thing on mobile, Android and iPad. Well, they fixed those. Those are no longer on the list. You know, I've been running this on my iPad and my Android devices. So it's, you know, they're looking very much at what the community is telling them in terms of what do they need to tackle to make this thing more and more functional.
That's pretty exciting stuff. Cameron, been entirely too long since we last talked. Let's not make wait this long again. And thank you so much for coming on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you for the invitation. And anytime you want to chat again, just let me know.
You bet. And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.